You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It is the Anfield Raps Review Show, where we try to find diamonds in the rough of a Wednesday night in Sheffield. It's Dan Morgan, Neil Atkinson and Sean Rogers to go through Sheffield United 2. Oh, sorry, absolutely not. Sheffield United 0, Liverpool 2, rather, I should say. The teams and approaches of both, Neil, I'll give you my 2 pence worth, shall I? A clear post-match from the manager. He really wanted a sense of control from them. And I don't necessarily think that's represented in certain elements of the lineup, but I think it is in others. So, you know, Gakpo over Nunes might represent that element of control. What plays out is a little different, but there are things with certain personnel, you know, Gomez on the overlap from left back, getting players around Endo in the six. It does all form some kind of narrative around what then plays out, but it is also impacted by Sheffield United, it must be said, whose shape becomes quite fluent, I'd say, as the half goes on. You know, did a bit of a five box and then a bit of a one going on, the 5-3-2. Sean mentioned they looked at four at times. I think their main objective from Wilder coming back in seem to be closing the centre of the pitch, getting bodies in and around Liverpool's 8s and 10 area players. I think that plays out a little bit. I mean, we'll go into the game a bit more detail, but I think it's notable that there's only 17 passes between the start and midfield three from Liverpool, and Gakpo, for example, only receives 13 passes first half. It's indicative, really, of where Sheffield United's game plan was, I think. What do you think?
The first thing to point out is these players have got a manager sacked. And knowing the personality of the new manager, I reckon that's the first thing he's walked in and said. It's worth saying, you know, he knows Heckingbottom. He knows the club. He knows some of these players. And I reckon that in his first meeting, I think he'll have said, you've got that manager sacked. And I'm here now to help fix this and pick up the pieces. But the first thing that happens is you fall off the pitch. We have to drag you off. Come the end of the game, you are that knackered. If you're going to stand a chance, if we're going to stand a chance together, and also a little bit of this is, you might not think this is your career, but this is also your career on the line. Because, you know, a number of you are not getting a Premier League move. Should this not go as you want and as we want. And then I might just be a broom. I'm completely backed. I've come in because you've got that manager sacked, and I will say who stays and goes.
Yeah, gets that out of the majority of them as well, doesn't he? Souza in particular is one who, when you look at his defensive numbers...
He gets Souza, runs himself into the ground. Hamer collapses on the final whistle. It was one of the few benefits in terms of doing this show of being in the ground was on the final whistle, he just lies down on the floor. He's just lying down on the floor. And you can see his ribcage moving up and down when the final whistle goes. He's absolutely, you know, thrown it in there. And there's a couple of others as well. And I think that's played out in the pressures. It's worth pointing out that their average pressures before this game over the course of the campaign, Sheffield United, is 186. And they're putting over 220 in this one. There's also just a lot of them not wanting the ball. And I think that that's one of the things that's difficult for Liverpool. They're so determined and rigid to stay in their shape. Their pass completion numbers are 47%. 47%! You know, it's like, it almost feels like a joke. But I think that their plan was, no. And I think that the man, let's be clear, if he's had two sessions, he's done well. And one of those sessions will have been predominantly doing, at the very most, shape work and possibly just even video work in a team meeting. But I think he'll have said, we're going to start here. And the way we're starting here is we're not getting embarrassed. Don't you dare go onto a football pitch and embarrass me the way you embarrassed the previous fella. You shipped five at Burnley. You shipped eight at home when you played Newcastle. You got battered when you played Arsenal. This isn't happening to us anymore. And I think that you see all of that in there. And I think that that's why main thing they're in a position to do and choose to be in a position to do from the approach is just make it as hard for Liverpool as possible all game. So I think Liverpool's desire to want to get a fair bit of control on that, it's worth saying that they're not controlling things that are particularly complicated. And I don't mean that to sort of talk Liverpool down. There's still this series of physical contests that happen over the course of the game that Liverpool have got to win. And then the next sort of phase of that is, all right, why is he picking what he's picking? I think he's picking Gomez because he's probably thinking to himself, the only way these score is with a high ball. So I'll do that one. I think he's in part picking Endo as a little bit of a reward, but I think it's also he wants to have, when you think about the control of Endo, it's not so much the control of Endo, it's the idea of having the control of McAllister a little bit higher, which was the original.
Yeah,
sort of
really agree.
And then from there, I just sort of wonder a little bit if there is a mini problem with McAllister and Gakpo at the same time, because they want to operate in similar spaces. And it's not like McAllister's going to fill the space that Gakpo leaves, whereas Gakpo wants to fill the space that McAllister leaves. But the sort of player he is, McAllister's not going to leave that space all that often. So I think that becomes a little stuck in the mud for Liverpool. But, you know, if there's, for me, where the manager's concerned, you know, in the cold light of day, not necessarily when I'm watching the game on 88 minutes and it's still only 1-0, but in the cold light of day, one of the things I think you're seeing in this one is the manager saying, if this is what we've got to do against these poorer sides, if it isn't the idea that we cut loose, it's the idea we have to roll our sleeves up and absolutely scrap them to death, then we'll do that. If that's the way this is going to go, then that's what we're going to do. And I think he's determined almost to have the scrap. And I think within that as well, there's a set piece conversation where I think he felt as though, there was a point in the first half after it's gone 1-0 where I thought Van Dijk might get a hat trick because of the fact that Sheffield United were really happy to concede them the set pieces. So, you know, all in, I think, listen, from a Liverpool point of view, I think the manager gets predominantly what he wants. From a Sheffield United point of view, Wilder, I think, predominantly gets what he wants. And the game finishes Sheffield United 0, Liverpool 2. And I think but 1-0 on 90. And I think everyone's happy to sort of shake hands on that and get on with their lives, not least because Liverpool play another football match in about 20 minutes.
In terms of the setup and lineup for Liverpool, I think a lot of it is dictated obviously by the injuries. He's obviously made a commitment, Klopp, that I'm going to try and rotate and rest these three in particular through this week, hence the Salah sub second half, Nunes being on the bench. Gakpo hadn't played the other weekend, so it makes sense to kind of flog him, if you will. In terms of the midfield, there's a load of reasons to play Endo, freshness being one, the other one being the possibility of an aerial threat. I think especially the minute the managerial change moves, I think he probably have already been planning to use Endo anyway, but I think that would have been heavily reinforced. I think the minute Wilder goes in there, you think you're expecting probably an element of aerial bombardment. I think in particular, you think I'm really going to get that, and Endo's really good aerially in that role and really good at screening. And I think that plays out for Endo. And then in terms of the back four, I think you have to go with Konate and Van Dijk. I don't think that's a night where you throw Kwanzaa in. I think he's also going to be, this sounds ridiculous, but it's so important that you rest everyone for the Europa League that he's not going to want anyone in that Europa League lineup to get injured. Because the minute they get a knock and are ruled out, his big plans to give everyone the week off are in the bin. And then, of course, you've got the game with Man United on the back of that. So in terms of Kwanzaa, I think you'd players like that, you'd want to be wrapping them up in cotton wool. And there might be an element to a degree of Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott on that. And that
Was you surprised by Gomez, Sean? Especially not not playing him centre half in that sense of losing Matip in that context.
I did wonder whether they might just decide that a lot depends on Robertson's fitness. I did wonder whether they might think that Tsimikas would be the sacrificial lamb in the with Matip being out, and whatever you think of the transfer window not being open and what Liverpool may or may not do in that. I did wonder whether they thought, if we're playing Konate, we don't really want Gomez off the bench on that basis, because we're never too certain when Konate might miss again, and then we can't have Konate and Gomez out right now, ultimately. And if I play them both, I'm running that risk. Now, he's either considered that and decided, no, I'm happy with where they are and we're going to go ahead. He's obviously decided that Tsimikas, I suspect that Robertson's a way off, and they go, we really need Tsimikas in particular. I think also people may have thought, well, why are they playing Gomez in this game when they didn't against Luton, if you will? But I think because of what happened against Luton is why he's so keen for Tsimikas to play against Crystal Palace.
Did he start against Luton, Gomez?
Start against Luton, yeah.
Yeah, he played left back against Luton. But I also think, and we haven't seen enough of this, and I'm surprised we haven't seen more of it, there's against West Ham, Nunes last season at home tortures their line in terms of where to place the line. Tsimikas puts a couple of crosses in. Nunes does really well off them, in particular the goal. And that's something we've not seen that much of. And against Crystal Palace, I think there's an element that if you're going to play Tsimikas and push him up down the left-hand side against a team that are going to park the bus, you've got to have Nunes in that position, because of his aerial threat in particular for Tsimikas. So if you are going to rest Nunes, there's maybe an angle where you go, well, what's the point of me having Tsimikas go down the wing against potentially three big centre-halves, depending on how Sheffield United set up? Because I don't want them putting that in. I want someone who's going to punch passes through. And therefore, that in paper, that makes a bit more sense where you play Gomez. Where you then see Gomez set up through the game, though, it then arguably doesn't make much sense. But I think you can go round in circles like that, like I just have done for the past 60 seconds, I guess. But in terms of the setup, it's then really difficult in terms of how Klopp approaches this to work out what Liverpool wanted to do. When you look at the pass maps, it's the second half pass maps are a nightmare nowadays, because you have so many subs and so many people change positions, and the pass maps have got to put someone somewhere. So someone like Szoboszlai, what do you do with him when he has the kind of second half that he has, you know? So I think you've got to look really at the first half pass map, which looks very much like a 2-4-4. The issue with that is that, again, because Trent goes into so many different positions, it seems to me that Trent has a bit of a free role in this side, not just in this game, but I think this season. And that Liverpool have said, we want you to invert when it's set and only when it's right to invert. And that's why you quite often see him invert off goal kicks, because they've obviously got the time to move the right-sided centre-back a bit further out, get the left-back where they want him, and get that set. That's why I think in general play, when it's not a goal kick from the floor, that you often don't see him invert quite so much or as regularly in certain games. So I think in terms of the approach, I think it was kind of similar in theory, because when Keller was kicking out off the ground, Gomez would be set up where we've seen Tsimikas and Robertson. But as they move into the middle third, he was doing what Tsimikas and Robertson do and leaving us two at the back. I'm not a fan of that, personally. And I think if you're chasing the game, I am a fan of that. But this Liverpool team needs to start getting clean sheets. I think this Liverpool team needs to start getting serious about defending and more serious about defending. And up to maybe a week or two ago, there was no way they're going to be in a title race with the way they're defending in every way. And part of that's structural. Part of that is that they haven't got that many natural defenders in a team. And part of that is then the way that the players defend thereafter and concentration and things. I think one thing that came across last night is I do think Liverpool are getting more serious. And I think that stems from Virgil. I think he's getting more serious about the defending. It's noticeable in the second half when Gomez goes down the left-hand side and does some nitty-gritty defending. He's willing to use his left foot, gets Liverpool a goal kick. And Virgil's like goes up and is like doing that chest thumping thing that you normally only see Virgil do when someone scores a goal. Trent is much more withdrawn second half.
Yeah.
I think there's part of that to just say, listen, we get out of here with a clean sheet now. But I think also, look, just rest. I need you Saturday. If I can cruise you through this game, I need you to cruise through where you can. And I think there's an element of that for him. So in terms of the shape, I think it was kind of the box midfield. I just think the box midfield goes a bit awry. McAllister's way too high. I thought with my eyes he was way too high. When you watch bits back, he's way too high. When you look at where he gets on it, he ultimately doesn't. We can't get him in the game at all.
McAllister gets lost.
And he's just way too high. And I just think, with him having not played that role for so long, I can't believe that's on instruction.
I don't quite believe
they sold that.
I don't know how many people think he's a natural eight. Like, I think it's a much more of a project than people realize.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think some people get a bit hung up on numbers and positions and not at this
in our system, particularly
body shape.
He's a double pivot too. Like, he's a double pivot.
Yeah, there are some players, Dan, that I think are great facing the opposition goal and they're not great back to goal. Yeah, I think there are some players who are great on the half turn.
Like me.
And there are some players like me who aren't good at any. Mm-hmm. And none of the three. And McAllister strikes me as someone who you kind of want on the half turn, but you're more than happy having side on. I certainly don't want him back to goal.
Yeah.
And I think in that role last night, he spends too much of his time back to goal. And players can change and players can improve. And Harvey Elliott's someone I don't want back to goal because all he does is pass backwards.
Yeah.
And you can go through spells in the game, then where you're like, Harvey, like, you know, that's not what we want you to do. That's not your role on the side. But back to goal, he's not that great at spinning people around on the pirouette, if you will. Whereas someone like Cody Gakpo is really, really good. Someone like Ryan Gravenberch is outstanding back to goal. You know, like outside of the foot rolls, spin people in that way. Curtis Jones is someone very, very good. Back to goal, roll it into him, keep people off a phone box. He'd go, bring people more in. I'll just keep the ball. It's fine. Come and bounce off me. And I thought McAllister gets lost. And the other thing I thought in the approach that frustrated me, I've got no idea what our right side was doing. I get the left side. It was very much Diaz stay wide, Diaz stay high. We get a lot of ball out there. The Sheffield United pressing maps, the data backs up the eye test. All of Sheffield United's pressing is down that side. Gomez kind of backs him up down that side. He was a bit isolated. It was almost like, well, you're going to have to take your man on then. And there's a different conversation about that in that Diaz's dribbling numbers have fallen off a cliff since his first season. They're in rapid decline. Whether it's the injury, his game, something else, he's not beating men anymore. He's not taking them on anymore. That's probably a combination of factors and it could well go the other direction. But leaving him out there, I think that there's a separate discussion about Diaz. Do you see him as a facilitator or a killer? Because Jack Grealish plays that role as a facilitator. And people criticise his numbers, but that's a bit unfair. It'd be like playing Curtis Jones out there. He's not there to get the numbers. He's out there to facilitate loads of other things that have a value that are probably a bit hidden in terms of their value to a degree. I think Liverpool now need to have a look at Luis Diaz in that, is he a facilitator or a killer? And I think if they want him as a killer, I don't think his numbers are there. And I've been having a look at it as well. And they're not there. And they're certainly not going to be there if you isolate him out there on the right-hand side. I think this is where flexibility can be your biggest strength or your biggest weakness. Liverpool were rotating who was given the right side with. Sometimes it's Szoboszlai, sometimes it's Trent, sometimes it's Salah. You have a look back at it, and it's not anyone specific. But I just think, again, the issue with that is that can get a bit lost and a bit messy. And I think the overriding thing on the night, which means Liverpool have to dog it, and this can just happen no matter what you do structurally, the first two touches for too many of the players wasn't good enough. Either be the first touch, the next touch. and it just ended up being sloppy and a bit inconsistent, and then you end up just having to dog it, and that's fine. In this run of games, I'm much more interested in the clean sheets and Liverpool being serious about defending, to be honest, than anything else.
I think that the interesting thing on the night is what Liverpool don't do is try and fix, is when we get past the 66th minute when he makes those two subs, I think it becomes crystal clear he's not trying to fix the structural issues. He's instead gone, we're not conceding a goal. We're not conceding a goal. So we're 1-0 up, we've got the goal. We've got the one. We don't think these can get one. If all of my players are sensible but not good from this point, we will win the game. And to be fair to the manager and to those players, that's how it plays out. And I think that at the back end of last season, and I think at the start of this season, up until, say, the October international break, I think they'd have chased a performance. And they don't do that. They don't do that. They do not chase the performance. They allow the reality, which is we've gone 1-0 up from a set piece. And it might be that Nunez will do something that makes it 2. And in the very end of the match, that's one of the things that happens. Nunez does something and it becomes 2. That's not to take away from the fact that Gravenberch shows really good calm. That Szoboszlai shows really good calm and certainty when he slots. But it's almost like at this point, that's it. That's what now our attacking threat is. Our attacking threat now is that at some point it'll be Nunez and he'll do something good. I think Elliot coming on at the same time. There's a point where when Gravenberch comes on, it's very explicit. This is now 4-5-1. They're actually having a chat with each other on the pitch and people are holding up hands and numbers and they're going, this is 4-5-1 now. This is what we're doing. It's going to work like this. You're going there because we are just seeing this out. And I think that bodes really well. For the grand scheme, I think it bodes really, really well because it bodes that for all the bit of bravado in some post-match interviews and for all that, maybe Trent, you know, himself feels like he's on one. I think there's a little bit of a thing where there's different ways to be on one and you sort of get to see a post-match in the game in this one, that we're Sheffield United, what I think's really good about the result and what you can call in inverted commas the performance is Sheffield United wanted it to be 1-0 on 85, but so did Liverpool.
Mm.
And I think that that's really important. Liverpool, we're bought into that. So what you think is your best way home, we're saying we're accepting it. And then go on then, give us your best shot. Give us 3 punches, see what you can do. And we'll go from there. And then I think it's also significant, I think, therefore, for the psychology of the team, that they go up the other end and score. You know, I think that's good in that it says, we hung on into this. We said that this was the way this was going to go. It went that way. We rode it out. Everything that you could throw at us, you threw at us. They have the last little sort of bit of a go after it's gone 2-0 where Archer gets his chance, which is his only real sort of decent chance with the ball on the deck over the course of the game. He gets that in there. And that's that. And I think that from a Liverpool point of view, I think that's excellent. Without, as I say, whilst watching it, you're thinking, what on earth are we doing? What's the direction of travel? Why can't they just play better? I mean, genuinely, one of the things I was saying at half time was if they play well here for 10 minutes, they could score 3 goals. And that was true. Yeah. But what they didn't do was risk anything in trying to play well here for 10 minutes. I think they're going to have to think about McAllister. I think it is more of a project, as you say, Dan. I think also it's the sort of thing that I think could make a real difference at Anfield against poorer sides.
Mm.
It also makes a bit more sense when you've got Nunez or you've got whoever it is who's playing central, wants to stretch it. So if you had Jota, I think it'd make more sense if Jota was 9. I think it make more sense because Jota would vacate the space as a 9 on the one hand, but is also prepared to go and live on the shoulder, which means McAllister would have a bit more space in there to work. So I think that could be, I think that Gakpo's the worst person for that. But I also think it's worth saying it's the first time he's got to play there since pre-season. So he's just sort of remembering the ropes all over again in there. Diaz question, insofar as there is one, and I think it is the one as Sean sort of framed it and phrased it. It is literally, what is it you want? You know, I think that that's, you know, in the same way that if we're not careful, I think that City have sort of talked themselves into reducing the effectiveness of some players and ending up with question marks hanging over them is in part because whilst there can be at times sort of managerial clarity on what it is you want and you can get that, you can actually erode other bits of performance, and then when you turn around and you need it, it's sort of not there anymore. So I'm emphatically of the view of what do you want? and go from there.
Neil Atkinson here. If you're listening to this, I've interrupted Dan Morgan and Sean Rogers talking to me about the game that's just happened in the last couple of days. That is the review show. It happens after every single match, and it's a pleasure to do. I always find researching for it to be genuinely engaging and genuinely educational, and getting to speak to Dan and Sean is always an absolute pleasure, along with any other guest that we get on this show from time to time. We do it every single match, and every single Liverpool game, there's always something to learn from, something to take, something to be intrigued by, a question to ask, if not necessarily answer. It is the review at the Anfield Wrap. Wherever you get your podcasts from, it'll be free for this week. Share it with your friends by all means. But we'd like you to sign up, obviously, theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe, Patreon, Google and Apple, wherever you feel. The review will be there week after week.
Just on that, though, so I think one of the points I'd make on it is, I think it's really hard to say you want Luis Diaz to be a facilitator when the fella before him was both a facilitator and a killer, to use Sean's words. And I think in a similar way, you have a similar conversation about someone like Gakpo playing in a false nine. I think Liverpool were previously blessed with such a hybrid of a team that the two players who played nine and left, if you like, were absolute killers and absolute facilitators. And I think you can say the same about the other fella who was on the right. I think why a lot of people don't know where they are with this team this season, and one of the big reasons why, is because it's shifted a little bit, that as an identity. So, you know, the forwards are more facilitators in this side, I'd say. And I'd say ultimately that leaves a bit of responsibility for the midfielders to be more killers. You know, Trent's more of a killer, if you like, in this current incarnation. And I'm just, you know, I think maybe then that there's one of the sort of shifts we do have to do in our minds is to say, well, actually, you know, you've got a real body of evidence there to justify that the goals need sharing out a bit more than a team, for example.
There's definitely an element to that, but I think there's something else as well, which is that the fella who's meant to be the ultimate killer in the side is Nunez, when the goal return isn't quite where you want it to be at this point. But it's difficult to argue with the commitment and the performance at times. And so he's not really facilitating, but what he's doing is he's fracturing the opposition, and then finally at some point Liverpool get to take advantage.
Yeah.
And you know, you could do with that being a bit cleaner. You know, I think that we'd all feel like it made a ton more sense if Nunez had five more goals. I think you'd be then sort of saying, well, this is what I thought, or this is what I expected, or this is how it's meant to be. It's something as simple as that. But I think at the same time, it's difficult to simultaneously, you know, so at the minute, if the amount he's currently underperforming his expected goals by in the league, which is 2.2 goals, he was overperforming his expected goals by, then I think we'd be saying, no, this all makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
Flip side of that is, you know, you get to see exactly what the value of him is in terms of it going to. I think the chance that he doesn't score is a worse chance than we thought. I think it becomes a harder chance. But then even that, there's been a couple of times recently where you just want him to sort of get it out under his feet. The other thing to point out as well as to why it's even a question mark on him is that he's hit the post five times or six times. So this is another one of them where, you know, we've seen it in the past. And I think that there'll be nothing better really than at some point in the next two or three home games that are all big home games, I think Jurgen Klopp will be absolutely desperate for Darwin Nunez to come to the party in one of those three in a big way. And if he does... Because if he does, then I think it makes everything else sort of coalesce. I also thought that Gakpo's general performance improves when he moved left in this one as well, which I think is something worth thinking about. And then the now legendary, the endless, you know, the other one to point out here is that I still don't think we have entirely answered the question as to what we're doing with Jota. So he's ended up with these projects. But simultaneously, and the other thing to point out is all of the players that we've just mentioned, including Diaz, have all had really big, good moments playing for a side that sits second, that we all think have got a fighting chance of being top at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking here about you know, if there was in Nunez, there was a reversion to mean around goal scoring with maybe a cherry on top, then I think we're saying it's flying. With Diaz, I think if there was one compelling game in three and two facilitating games in the other three, we're flying. I think with Gakpo, if we can get him calm and positioned on a pitch where it makes sense, that'd be great. When Jota comes back, I think the idea of Jota doing his bits and pieces that he can do in games arguably like that one last night is what I would say. I think that he's actually the big miss last night. I think that Jota would make a ton of sense in that sort of game last night. He's probably the man who turns it from 1 to 2. And then when you've got it to 2, there's more of a chance it ends up going to 4. But we can't turn it from 1 to 2. So I think all of that, and then in there, Salah's just playing ever so well most of the time, even though, even when it doesn't go for him, he's tending to do the right things and being sensible and all the hits and all the above. But I think that, but all we're talking about here is genuinely what are quite small tweaks that the manager himself might feel as though, I can't do this for them. The thing that I've just, everything that Neil's just described, if he was listening to this, he'd think, I can't do that for them. I can maybe give them a little bit more information. I can maybe use Gakpo and Jota a little bit differently from time to time. But apart from that, I can't do the next bit. And I think that that's where the players themselves sort of need to do it. The one thing I would say is, I'll go back to it. There's 3 really big home games on the horizon. If Liverpool can do the decent thing on Saturday, there's 3 massive home games on the horizon. And it would be wonderful if across those 3 home games, we're coming out buzzing. Because in one of them, Nunez has been evidently man of the match. In one of them, Diaz has been evidently man of the match. And in the other one, either Gakpo or Jota has been evidently man of the match. And Mo Salah's just been Mo Salah. And if that happens, then I think we're in great, great nick. And that's why I think it doesn't take much, but it is the next thing.
Just to expand on that with a few numbers, if you look at the league table and rattling through this, you know, if you look at the XG for the XG conceded and then sort of the XG goal difference, if you were, which always thinks quite revealing, it doesn't always quite work out that, but look, the bigger that number is, the better it is normally for all parties, especially with your Liverpool hat on. You know, Newcastle are really underperforming. They're actually top of the sort of goal difference chart, if you like, but there's a few mitigating factors in there for them in terms of, you know, Sheffield United being one as an example within that sample. You know, Arsenal 0.73, Manchester City 0.74, we're 0.58. And the big reason for being at 0.58 is our XG goal conceded. You know, Arsenal 0.73, City 0.88, Newcastle 0.99. We're over one, we're 1.13. Again, we've said this all season, there's mitigation because of being down to 10 men, 9 men, but if we're going to compete for the title, that number needs to be lower than one. So, but on the attacking players, I had a look at XG for shots, but also XG assists. Per 90 minutes across the top clubs. And I think 0.5, Neil, I don't know what you think, 0.5 would kind of be a good bar for me. That's not to say anyone below 0.5 isn't any good. I just think if you're over 0.5, that, I think, focuses the mind a bit and makes your eyes pop out a little bit to a degree. So as an example, XG and XG assisted per 90, Nunes is 0.77. Salah is 0.72. The only player at Arsenal over 0.5 is Gabriel Jesus at 0.60. For context, and the only player at Manchester City over 0.5 out is Erling Haaland at 0.79. So you want Nunes and Salah on that pitch as often as you possibly can, and we've got 2 of them. Now, in comparison, when you look at Diaz and Gakpo, Jota, by the way, is 0.50.
Yep.
Which, and it doesn't so feel Jota like that. Yeah, isn't it? And it doesn't even feel like he should be. Like, if I said to you, where do you expect him to be generally? You'd be like, yeah, probably that. When I say this season, where would he be? I'm not sure I'd have said that higher figure. Mm. Gakpo's 0.34. Diaz is 0.32. Szoboszlai's 0.28. Now, when you look at Kai Havertz, he's 0.31, very similar to Gakpo and Diaz. And Katia is 0.35. Saka's 0.44. Ødegaard 0.31, but he's reverting to mean now. I don't think it's a coincidence that Ødegaard is pairing and Arsenal now look a lot better going forward. Martinelli's 0.27 at City. Foden's 0.39. Doku 0.35. So Gakpo and Diaz aren't in the same category of numbers as your Haaland, your Salahs, your Nunes, your Jotas even, Bakary Saka, Gabriel Jesus. And that's where I just wonder, I don't think we will do this, which is a shame, I think. When you look at the squad and how we've been playing this year, I'd have been very tempted to make this more 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2-y. I would love to see Salah and Nunes much more central. I think Salah's lost that yard of pace on the right wing, which enables him to go at people 1v1. I would have no issue with some games Szoboszlai being centre mid, but other games Szoboszlai being Ray Houghton, where Trent can sometimes go on the outside of him as a Bosley, can just go and drift, can just go on that inside run, whatever he wants. Diaz can be more of a left-sided midfield player. You can play Gakpo off the strikers. Gakpo can drop in left mid if that's where you want him. Curtis Jones can go and do that left mid role in a very sort of 1980s Bob Paisley way. Harvey Elliott can fill in right midfield and those kind of areas. You know, we got good results with Harvey Elliott playing in that role last year, by the way. He plays against Manchester City at home in that role, and it's when it's 4-3-3, Harvey Elliott looks a bit of a square in a circle hole, I guess. You can keep Trent at right back and you can build in a three and have Trent as that quarterback and progress from there. And Robertson and Tsimikas, you can let them do what they want to do. And that is get on the outside of Gakpo, get on the outside of Curtis Jones, get on the outside of Diaz, whoever you want to play in that left side role. But if I was the opposition, I would not want Darwin Núñez and Mo Salah near each other in the final third regularly. And the thing with Núñez is if he ups his game another gear in terms of ruthlessness, I think he's as crucial as Virgil van Dijk to a title challenge. In the same way, I always felt that if Stan Collymore had upped his level of gear, he had the ability, Liverpool would have won league titles. Irrelevant of the problems Liverpool had other areas of that side and squad, the ability was there for him to drag that another 5-10 points because he was just insane in his level of ceiling. And I think if Núñez is man of the match against Man United, I don't even think it's a close win. I think Liverpool at 5 or 6 with the state of that.
On Sean's point, I think the manager will throw a 4-4-2 in somewhere at some point in the... I don't want to limit it by saying by the Newcastle game, but I do think it's coming in one of the three homes that I think he'll throw a 4-4-2 in one of them. And I think it'll be interesting to see which one and then understand the why afterwards. But I think he will throw one in. I think it's coming and I think it will be in there. I could be completely wrong, obviously, being completely wrong in the past, but I think they've been working on it and every now and again you sort of see it. I think the other thing to point out is I think part of why for Gakpo and Diaz, especially those numbers are a little lower, I actually do think it's not that far away from already being a bit 4-4-2. It's just it's completely asymmetrical. So to be fair to Diaz and Gakpo, I feel as though Diaz is being used certainly more as an attacking midfielder than as an outright forward.
Gakpo started the season as a left 10, and it's worth caveating that as well. That's going to be skewed slightly.
Yeah. So that there's been that moment as well where that happened, and it's worth sort of pointing that out. And I think anyway, you know, you go to many of the Klopp sides, when you go through those shapes in the past, you know, there's points where Firmino is a de facto attacking midfielder. Much more, you know, when you look at the average positions and you look at back with your eye test, you look at the data, you look at where he's doing his pressures, he's as much an attacking midfielder. It stops being false nine and becomes attacking midfield with two forwards who, not too dissimilar actually to the way at times Watkins and Diaby play for Villa, where they're almost two separate islands who scare the life out of you, if you see what I mean. Like each of them is happy to play between fullback and centre-back. So therefore, de facto, can be 30 yards apart, both looking to do a similar thing and both testing that line over and over. And that's what Mane and Salah were at times. So I think it's important to sort of say that he's actually already not that far away. I think what we're almost referring to a little bit more, and you get to see it at the end of the game against Fulham, is the idea that there is a front two, and the names of that front two are Núñez and Salah. And then there is another footballer who plays wide of Salah on one side, and another footballer who plays wide of Núñez on the other. And that's what we're referring to here as well, something that could be a little bit different. But I don't think, you know, he's now done it against Fulham last week. I think, again, he doesn't play 4-3, what you call 4-3-3 through this one against Sheffield United all the way through. Certainly not all the way through, and I'd argue for much of the game, that's not quite really there. It's almost closer to a 4-2-1-3 if you wanted to try to write it down, not least because of where he drops McAllister. And even there, again, I think Diaz's job is to just come a little bit deeper than Salah's is in there as well at times. And I think that the idea of... I wonder if one of the things the manager's waiting for before he goes for this a little bit more is he almost might be waiting for Mo Salah to knock on his door and say, I feel like I'm getting lost in games a little bit wide right and I don't feel like he's getting me in. So how do we do this? And almost let Salah make the call. As counterintuitive as that might be, or the manager's in charge, et cetera, et cetera, I think there might be a little thing where he might be thinking, how do I get my best player to go, you know what, I want to be in there. When I play for Egypt, I wear number 10. I've done this. I want to go in there and I want to be with this fella. And I wonder if that might be what he's waiting for in a sense.
Well, I think we also need to know what's happening with Mohamed Salah next year as a big question of this, because one of the things I would personally, if we're all doing what we would do, one of the things I would do as a bit of an experiment is to have a look at Diaz Wright.
Yeah.
And say your job now is basically to feed Nunes as much as possible, as much as we play him. And I think there's loads of ways in which you can hit him. You know, you've got that Virgil Diag from left centre back, you've got Trent in Burton. You make Szoboszlai a bit of an island on the right, which he loves. You give him yards to run into. And also, you know, I think it's a little bit unfair on him, because if you look at him in the squad, when he doesn't play left side, the personnel in terms of style and how they play is so different to him. Like, you can make much more of a stylistic argument between Jota and Gakpo than you can between any of them and Nunes. The job becomes so
Diaz,
different.
Than Diaz,
yeah. So the job becomes so different. And I just wonder whether, you know, because Salah is so influential to what Liverpool is and its culture and its identity of what a Liverpool side is now, that we might have to break the mould a little bit. And don't get me wrong, if Mohamed Salah signs a 3-year contract with Liverpool tomorrow, I'd be made up. You know, I'd be banging, you know, sort of all the rhetoric out about the fact that he can probably perform the top level for another 3 years. That's not an issue. I just wonder whether we have to break something in our own minds about what Liverpool's right side is and what we get out of it, because he's such a unique player. And you might have to just change the entire thing completely and do that in a way that fits Diaz a little bit as well.
I think Szoboszlai is I think Szoboszlai's work rate and what he does, there might be an element that will not getting the most out of it when the ability for him to output in the middle and final third in particular is there. His subtlety on the ball, his finishing ability, his running power, his dribbling. You know, if this was this is ridiculous. If this was Kenny in the late 80s, there's only one position he's playing. And that's that right side midfield role, which is when we lose it, you fill in here. And when we've got it, you can go where you want, based on the position of the opposite player. So if Nunes goes out, you're in. If the fullback goes round you, you're in. If you come in, we get the fullback round you. That kind of thing, really. And I think Szoboszlai, he didn't play that well last night in large part. His work rate is absolutely unreal. Off the charts.
He's not very good at all. I don't think. And he gets the goal in fair play. And I think his touch is just not quite where he wants it to be. And he's getting a bit frustrated at times. He gets moved around.
He's just physically beyond. He's just physically beyond everyone on the pitch.
Yeah, and that's the Joe Fagan test. In it, the Joe Fagan test, you're not having a good night, but can you still help me win a difficult away game? And if the answer is yeah, I'm interested in signing you. Because winning 3-0 at home when you're playing well takes care of itself at Liverpool. But I need to know, you can have a bad night and it doesn't stop us winning games of football. And I thought,
he's one of those sickos who, he's one of those sickos who, when you play footy at like amateur level or like semi-pro level, like, he's one of those fellas who can go on like a 3-day bender, go to footy Saturday, Sunday, and then like run a marathon on the Monday.
He did with Hungary, didn't he?
He's got, yeah, maybe he did, but he's got that. He just looks like he can do another 90 on 89. Just looks like it's there for him.
He's one of those lads who's hanging on, but he goes down to play six aside, but someone else is lacking a couple, and he hangs on after you played your game and you're crawling off the pitch. And he said, "Yeah, don't worry, I can fill in there." And then he's man of the match in that one.
And then it's 9 p.m. and he's been hanging on since four. He's been playing.
Yeah, exactly. He's played 4 hours.
Just to finish on him, I just think we position it in the most congested areas of the pitch. And what I think I would do with it is say, I've got the structure of this team set where you go and find the position of maximum damage, and that's your job. Because, you know, him and Trent as well, having the freedom to... I just think we're getting him a bit congested for me, Szoboszlai, and then he's doing a bit of water carrying. And I think there's probably... I think you could have a double pivot in there. And sometimes it would have to be him, I think. But in the bigger games against tougher opposition, I'd have no issue with it being an Endo and a McAllister as an example. You are the base in front of Virgil and whoever for the rest of this side to go and do the damage and go and hurt people. Szoboszlai's shown enough. He's at 0.28 now, XG and XG assists per 90. I think you could double that with his talent.
Just to round off, Sten, just to round off, we'll come back to the game. So on Neil's point before, I think he's absolutely spot on. I think from 55 onwards, Liverpool just do a shutout job. And particularly, I'd say 55 to 77 between both the Salah and the Nunes chance. I think they really assert more control. They're 115 pass completion out of 131, 49.1% territory, which I think is a bit of a sneaky number, that in terms of it shows that they maybe just drop off a little bit and they're not that bothered about territory in that sense, that they want to control the game. 12 recoveries in there, no shots for Sheffield United, only two passes inside the box. Liverpool do a job of telling a story. That story is, we're going to take control of this game. This game is a non-event for you now. Maybe the other thing to round off then, Sean, on is the idea of what Liverpool had to face, and maybe the fact that Liverpool knew what they had to face. So Sheffield United go long with a success rate of 7 out of 44 passes. Also worth noting on Neil's shout earlier about their possession, that was with under 200 attempted passes as well. Also, you know, Liverpool's dual success rate is really high, higher than what we see in usual games, 28 out of 38 duels won. Set pieces in both areas are interesting. They do a really aggressive, feels like a really aggressive man-to-man job. But I think there is a bit of panic from them, and that probably comes from them being 1 percentile in set piece XG against. You know, they're given a ratio of a shot of a quality of 0.45 per 90. 12 corners for Liverpool. It felt like we utilised that threat both for and against, and nullified, but utilised and nullified it better than we did against Luton, which is a positive recently when you're talking about the defending. But it did feel like a game that Liverpool had to sort of navigate around that before they got their foothold in it.
For sure. I don't know how we didn't get a couple of penalties on our corners. I thought they were even more reckless and aggressive than even Luton Town were. And that's definitely something I think Virgil and Klopp need to be having a word with the officials about every game now before we go out, just trying to put as many seeds in the mind as they can. Without criticising them, I'd be sending the videos in and everything just to try and make sure it's more at the forefront of some of the referees' minds on these things. But, you know, a lot of it comes down to the delivery, doesn't it, in terms of the quality they've got there. But Virgil's pairing, isn't he, ultimately? And when he's pairing, he's a massive threat as well in the opposition box. Canate really stood up to massive pressure last night. I think he was really well aided and abetted, to be fair, by Endo in particular, but also Szoboszlai and Trent being aware for them second balls. I was a bit nervous with the subs that we might have ended up with a midfield that wouldn't be that good dealing with that kind of thing. But Canate really stood up to the aerial challenge massively, because they just decided they were going to bombard us down that area. And, you know, from the set piece point of view as well, that's something Liverpool would be keen to take into Crystal Palace again, especially against... The problem with Palace, because they've come on the back of that hiding, it's not dissimilar to what Neil was saying about, you know, Manchester United, in that those players are coming in wanting Hodgson to go, look, we park the bus here, we play dead. We don't engage in a way that Crystal Palace may well have engaged, where they come on the back of, say, 9 points from 15, having beat Bournemouth 4-1. And yep, feeling like they're pairing a bit more, they might have gone, okay, well, we can have a little bit of a go at these, unless the scoreline goes otherwise. So I think Liverpool will be coming into a very different game this time round. But against Palace, I don't think it'll be like for like in terms of approach. But as you say, Liverpool couldn't even get any pressures. You look at the pressing numbers for Liverpool, there wasn't a Sheffield United weren't interested in passing the ball anywhere. And it was just route one, keep our shape. See what
it's a good way not to be counter-pressed.
It's uncounter-pressable, isn't it? So I think Liverpool, if you're looking at a broader spectrum, you'd be keen for some creativity to come in the forwards to be getting more chances now because of the way these two last games have gone. It's always about what happens next. If Liverpool go and do the decent thing against Palace and play well, and the forwards, or at least one of them, get on the score sheet like Neil has been alluding to, it, then job done, ultimately. And games like that are just get the job done. And as I say, the most important thing for me is that Liverpool are serious about defending in this. And they were, that Callagher does brilliant for the save. But other than that, Sheffield United don't get a sniff.
Yeah. Last one, Neil, would you start Nunes against Palace?
Yeah, I think, and I think that the manager's decided that by virtue of the subs. So I think Nunez starts against Palace. I think the set piece of stuff's dead interesting in that, you know, obviously when one of the reasons why set piece XG mounts up for some of these sides who are down the bottom of the table is because they concede loads of set pieces because they concede in corners all the time. It's worth saying that. Yeah. But one of the things to point out is that the aerial percentage win for Sheffield United is really low. There was a stat a couple of games ago going around that they don't win that many headers. And I think last night they were showing a bit of determination that they're going to improve in that. You know, it's something else where if you're the manager of Sheffield United, you're a bit like, lads, Alex Seppian pulled apart. But we've got to win our aerial duels. You know, I think that that's, and certainly in our own penalty area. So I think that that was always going to run into that a little bit last night. But I think that being sharp from set pieces in terms of getting the first or second goal in these games, I think is going to be important for us. And I think this is where it's no bad thing that Konate's back in, because I think Konate is his own problem to solve in that area as well as Van Dijk. Then if you've got Nunez in there too, then you're carrying sort of a fair bit of threat. I just think that the other thing that we've got to have our eye on our own set pieces is not getting counted on. I think we've got to do better on that. And last night, that was, in a way, that was their only way home. And we sort of solved that second half by not getting any more set pieces. I'd rather we solved it by structuring better on the counter.
Okay, all good stuff. Thanks to Neil, thanks to Sean, and we'll see you after Crystal Palace. Sports Social Podcast Network.